This is the Helping Up Podcast, all about addiction, recovery, and grace. I'm Vic King, chaplain at Helping Up Mission in Baltimore City, and today, the story of Doug Cofield. One of the ways I've heard Doug describe his journey is this. He says, I used to be a hopeless dope fiend, but now I'm a dopeless hope fiend, usually followed by a large belly laugh, which you will hear more than once in this interview with Pastor Gary. We hope you enjoy it.
Okay, so Doug, you were born where?
Chesapeake, Virginia.
How old were you when Grandma started raising you?
About 4 or 5.
Wow. So you really didn't have a mom and dad. Yet Grandma, which is like Mom.
She was like Mom.
Yeah, she was your mom, really, yeah. What was your drug of choice?
Well, alcohol, obviously, is the number one.
Right. But you started off earlier with other stuff.
I've done everything.
Yeah. When did you first start using chemicals?
When I was 16.
What'd you start with? Alcohol? Weed?
Mm-hmm. Alcohol. I tried weed, but it didn't work. So I did LSD. That worked.
That worked. You're still in high school?
Yeah.
Okay. You finished high school? You graduated?
Yeah.
When would you say you actually became either an alcoholic or an addict? Did you have a real addiction?
I didn't admit it until I was probably in my 40s. And when I think back, when I was driving and had my own truck back in the 80s, I always had a bottle of Jack Daniels with me. So actually, I was an alcoholic way before I wanted to admit I was.
How old would you have been?
In my 30s. Or even in my 20s, actually.
Okay, yeah.
At first, it was just getting high on the weekends. Then it turned into getting high and drinking during the week. And then it turned into carrying a bottle around in the truck with me, you know.
Do you feel like you had abandonment issues because of your mom and dad splitting up and Grandma raising you?
No, actually, when I was with my grandmother was probably the happiest times.
Nice.
When it got bad for me was when my dad remarried. And me and my stepmother did not get along well, I guess because I was the oldest. And she had a son that she brought into the marriage. And we used to get in fights, and I used to whip his butt, so she didn't like me.
So at that point, you were feeling a lot of rebellion at home. And do you remember why you started using?
Actually, when I first started, it was just because that's what one of my friends was doing. You know, he, you know, introduced me to pot, and it didn't do anything to me. The drinking started with other high school friends going out. Instead of going to school, we'd go out to the haunted fairgrounds, they call it, and buy a bunch of beer, and because there was a place down on the Carolina line that would sell it to us. Alcohol made me feel like if I was at a dance, I would be real shy and I couldn't dance. I'd be scared to ask the girl to dance, but if I got a couple drinks in me, I would get out there and cut the rug and not care.
So it gave you some boldness.
Liquid courage.
Yeah, liquid courage. But not that you weren't one of those guys that said it made me feel normal. I didn't feel normal.
None of it made me feel normal. Speed, the first time I did it, made me feel like I was
Superman.
I was, everything was 110%, you know?
Yeah. So your career has been in driving truck driving, long distance. When did you start that? You graduated from high school, and then what'd you do?
I worked in construction a little bit, and then I got a job driving a fuel oil truck, picking up waste oil.
And so you were driving, and long hauls, did a lot of long overnight hauls?
Yeah, at first it wasn't. At first it was, you know, local stuff, but and then I got into car hauling, and it was like just overnight stuff, and eventually it turned into going all over the country.
And at which point did you start carrying the bottle with you every day?
In the 80s, when I had my own tractor trailer.
So steadily drinking more and more.
Yeah.
Still doing the other drugs as well.
Yeah.
And did you often drive under the influence?
Yeah.
So that was just who you did. And you probably weren't the only one on the road in the big rigs doing it.
A lot of people were doing speed, you know, to stay awake at night and stuff.
I know you've got a history of real spirituality in your life before I ever met you here. Where did that come in? Did that come from grandma? Where did that fit in?
It started with my grandmother.
Okay.
She took us to church every Sunday, and it was a Southern Baptist church, Deep Creek Baptist. And so I was taught at an early age what the truth was and was saved at probably 12 years old. So I knew the truth, but when I started partying and getting high, I got away from it and did my own thing. Now, I've been a prodigal more than one time. And this last time around was the end for me.
Yeah. Your mom and dad, were they spiritual people?
My mom is, but I wasn't living with her. My dad, he was like, well, I talk to the man upstairs sometimes, you know. So he wasn't real. He didn't go to church with us and stuff like that. If it wasn't for my grandmother, I probably wouldn't have.
So during your truck driving years, you really weren't plugged into God very much.
No.
You're a truck driving man of the 80s, drinking and drugging. And when did you have that first aha moment with Jesus again?
When I shot a guy and ended up in prison out in Hagerstown.
You want to say just briefly about the situation, or would you rather not?
It was in a bar room that we hung out over there by Dundalk Marine Terminal where I hauled cars out of, and we were all drinking and partying together, and some guy accused my girlfriend, who is my wife now, of taking $3.50 off the bar, and I tried to, you know, it ain't worth this, and give him $5, and they wanted to fight, so I tried to fight them, and it was more than me. You know, it was the three of them, and they jumped on top of me, and she tried to drag one off. And when she did, he went to smack her, and she was like, don't hit me because he will hurt you. Talking about me, well, they laughed because I was on the bottom of the pile. But when I seen him smack her, I broke out from under the pile, went out to my truck, and come back in with the artillery. And they met me at the door, and I had a tie-down bar in my hand that I used to tie the cars down. And we were all drunk.
Right.
So they were like, what you going to do with that? I'll show you. And I tried to swing at one of them, and they snatched the bar out of my hand and jumped on top of me again and started beating me. She got on the phone, dialed 911. My boyfriend's getting beat up. Meanwhile, I'm pulling my pistol out of the front of my pants and saying, you guys are fixing to get off of me. I cocked it, and they said they weren't going nowhere. I cocked it, fired, hit the guy in his leg. He went flying against the wall, and everybody took off, and she said, never mind, and hung the phone up.
But the guy that was shot wound up in the hospital, and you wound up getting arrested.
Yes.
And what happened? You serve what?
I did. They gave me 30 years for attempted murder, 20 years for assault with intent to murder. And then, I mean, I hired a lawyer, turned myself in, went to court, and they ended up suspending all of it but five. So I did 2.5 years on five and got out on parole. And I did 10 years of parole and didn't get in no trouble anymore.
5 years of prison did you use?
Mm-mm.
So when you got out... on parole, you weren't supposed to use either.
Mm-mm.
Did you?
Not for a while. I decided when I was going to prison, because that was a tough pill to swallow, that I knew from my early childhood where the answers laid. So if I'm going to prison, I'm taking Jesus with me. So I went into prison, and what I did was study the word the whole 2.5 years I was there. Out of a plain King James with no study notes. And that's where I got most of my knowledge of the Bible, you know. And I prayed for understanding. You know, I asked God to give me understanding of his word, because I really wanted to get to know, you know, because I was getting a better picture of the love of Christ, of how much he really did love me, that while I was doing all these stupid things, he was still dying for me, you know. And
how old were you at this point?
33.
Interesting number.
Yes.
Thinking of Jesus.
Yeah.
So So that was a moment of clarity, and you really made some spiritual commitments, and it was real.
Yeah. And when I got out of prison, I was really on fire for God. And we found a church to start going to. So she was right there with me. And I was determined to do the right things. We weren't married yet.
Okay.
So I got an apartment across the street from her apartment so that we wouldn't be living together, because I figured that would be the sin that would give the devil the foothold.
Yeah.
And eventually it did, because eventually I did.
Yes.
I'm like, why am I paying two rents here? You know, I started thinking on my own understanding and ended up moving in with her. And it gave a foothold, and it also, because the church I was going to, they were like, had put me on the church council, and I was helping doing some of the Sunday school classes and singing with the choir, and, you know, everything was great. But when I moved in with her, they were like, they had a problem with that. So that's when I started drifting away again.
Now, you were already back to driving.
Yes.
So you were driving.
Not at first, but I did get back into it not long.
And so you were driving, a church guy, it's going okay. And then you made a tactical error, and it really set in motion the old stuff. How long did it take you then to start using?
The first 6 months.
Yeah. And what was it?
I can't remember. I know we used coke or crack or whatever, because they had invented that now. Then when I got in my 40s is when I tried heroin, and that became a beast.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were both using together.
Yeah.
We were like, if one of us was clean, this has been going on a lot in our life, that one would get clean and the other wouldn't, and the one that wasn't would always drag the other one back down. And whether it was me or her, you know.
Yeah. So you're driving, using, back with your wife.
Mm-hmm.
No spiritual stuff going on again.
Mm-mm.
And how'd you wind up at Helping Up Mission, 2014?
I got locked up because drinking, and everybody was getting high at the house. I was still working for the company out of Dallas. Then I switched to another company so I could get to Baltimore a little more often, but I was still getting high and partying. And eventually they wanted to give me a UA and I couldn't take it. So I quit, and I got a job with another guy. I made one trip and he come took his truck. Because I bought 10 pills of dope before I left to go on a trip, and it took me almost 2 days to get from here to Frederick, you know, and I was supposed to be going to Ohio. So I really don't blame him for coming and getting his truck and stuff, but kind of suicidal feeling, but too chicken to do it. And I went to the hospital. When I come back from the hospital, she wasn't home, so I went out to try to find her. And when I did, I was walking down the alley, and there was a guy's work van there with the keys in the ignition. And I decided that was better than walking to find the car. And they happened to be sitting right across the street eating and seeing me get in the van and caught me and beat the snot out of me and called the police. And I got locked up for unauthorized use and theft, and did they gave me 18 months. I did 10 months. And when I got out, that's when I came to the mission the first time. Yes.
What was your relationship with your wife when that happened?
It was kind of shaky. I went over to her house at first. I think we were drinking, so we were fighting, and I ended up going around the corner and staying at this other guy's place, and eventually he's the one that brought me to the Helping Up Mission because he wanted to get me out of his apartment, I think.
Story.
You know what I mean?
It sure is.
And he brought me up here and dropped me off. But I just got out of jail. So the first time I came here, I still felt like that being at the Helping Up Mission, I didn't have my freedom. You know what I mean? Because I went from being locked up to a 90-day blackout. So when I got off the blackout, I didn't come back, you know, and I got high. That's the reason I didn't come back. I got high because she was still getting high at the time.
So you hooked up with her. And,
yeah.
And so you guys got high together.
Yeah. And then I wasn't going to come back and, you know, give a bad UA, so I just didn't come back.
And that was in 2014.
Yeah.
So you drove again?
No.
No more driving.
I don't know what I did. It's kind of foggy.
Not too much.
Because what ended up with us fighting, and me ended up on the street drinking, ended up in the hospital because I was feeling suicidal again. And from the hospital, they took me straight there to PAL recovery. And I did that 6-month program and graduated from there.
And did it clean?
For a while. Okay. But toward the end, like the thing about PAL is you get to keep your TDAP and your food stamps.
Because they're working off insurance.
So I was drinking off and on doing that. I wasn't really clean, yeah. You know.
Yeah.
I didn't use any drugs, but I was still hitting the alcohol.
Yeah.
Eventually, I guess what happened was when I was done there, the program was supposed to take me. And I showed up there with alcohol in my breath, and they wouldn't take me. So I went to John Hopkins, telling them I wanted to die, so they would take me in. And, well, they kept me overnight and put me out on the street the next morning and told me to go walk down to some place. I guess it's some kind of health care for the homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And while I'm walking from Hopkins, I'm like, well, the Mission is right up there. Why in the world am I going to walk all the way over there? So I just decided that I'd walk here and talk to somebody because it had been, you know, plenty of time that I could get back in. But anyway, I came here. And when I walked in the front door, it was like coming home. It was like, I'm safe now. Everything's good. The people made me feel so welcome. There was no here you are again or anything like that. I mean, even the other clients hugged me and welcomed me back. So I make it a point to try to do that to every man that I see that has left and come back now, you know, to pass it on the same way that people treated me when I came back.
Yep.
And that started the journey this time.
And you did come back. Now, you were reasonably enthusiastic your first time here.
Yeah.
But you came back with enthusiasm this time.
Yeah.
But there was more of a settledness in you this time. There was something different. I could see that.
Well, I was at the end of me. I knew, all right, God, I can't do this. I really, really need help. And I'm just going to go here and I'm going to do whatever they say. And I so much because I had lost, I couldn't feel him anymore. And not that he wasn't there, but I couldn't tell.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought I had, you know, they say you can quench a spirit. And I know you can't really kill him, but that's what it felt like. I couldn't feel him at all anymore. And I'm like, Lord, I want you, and I want you to take, because I'm done. Just take me and do what you want, and I'll listen to whatever they tell me to do, and we'll go from here.
And how old were you?
59. I turned 60 a month later.
Okay, so 59 years old, made a surrender to a whole nother level.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolute surrender, as Andrew Murray would call it.
Yep.
It's been awesome because it took a minute, but I got my peace back. I got my joy back. I've got things that are going on in my life that I even told Martin, asked me to help out on the Wednesday nights because he's got a lot of stuff catching up. So I started, and it's simple. You know, all you do is facilitate and play the video and talk a little bit. And I was scared to death to do it at first, because I felt totally incapable of doing anything. And, well, that's where this last bottom took me, whereas I had no more self-sufficiency. I was at the end of me. I'm hopeless, helpless. And if God don't do it, it ain't going to get done, you know. And I feel the same way when I go into that class. And when I played the video, I'm sitting there shaking because the video is getting ready to get over and I got to get up there and talk or, you know, try to get them to talk or something. And the first couple times it was okay. But the last 2 weeks, it has blown me away. I mean, I walk out of there now because last night was Wednesday night. And I'm telling the guys, you know, I really, you know, well, what are you doing? I said, I really don't know what God has for me. I know what I can do is go to seminary and better prepare myself for wherever he's going to use me. But I really don't have a clue what God's going to do with me. All I know is that he's driving and I'm not now. And toward the end of the class, one of the guys says, what you said in the beginning of the class, that you don't know what God's going to do with you, he's already doing it. And it encouraged me so much that I actually, you know, teared up, which I'm getting ready to now, but that's just me. but he, it made me feel really good because I sat there. I am scared and I don't know what to say. So I pray and I asked him to give me words to speak that will encourage, lift, and help these guys. And all I did, Pastor Gary, was share my heart. Yeah. What God's doing with me and how much I want you guys to feel what I feel and to know what I know and to know that when you've got this peace, when you've got this insurance, when you know that no matter what this world throws at you, that God has got your back, there is no better feeling in the world. And I want all of you guys to get this, you know, and it just, everybody started talking and it was so beautiful that, I was like walking on clouds when I left class last night.
Well, that's one of the things that I know that you've done, and I'm very proud of you that you did it. Of course, all of us here in the room know that you sing in our choir, up front in the middle,
right?
And you sort of have your own beat going on there,
right?
You do your own little dance. And they give you a little wide berth, so
yeah,
you can just
yeah.
move around,
so nobody
do.
Gets hurt.
and I leaned over to somebody that was new, and I just said, "Looks like he's enjoying himself, doesn't he?" And it's very obvious that you are in your element, doing something that's meaningful, and you feel really good about. And it does show. It certainly shows.
Well, praise God, because I try to sing from my heart, and everything I do is from I try to do from my heart now, because that's what really matters. And when you feel what you're singing, other people can feel it too.
Yep, absolutely. So, and you alluded to it, that you wanted to get biblical training,
right?
Because you feel like maybe God's been talking to you and calling you, and you're going to finally take a step of faith and obedience and step out for a real training to do ministry.
Yes.
So you're attending Faith Theological Seminary this fall.
Yep.
And you have any college behind you?
Nope.
So this will be brand new.
Yeah.
And really happy for you. Really proud of you. Anything else about this last year at helping at Mission that just has really stood out to you and really been meaningful to you?
Just being a part of the choir, being able to worship God, share my joy with other people has been real meaningful. Even the guys are, you know, just starting to call me, you know, like, I don't know, they're acting respectful toward me. And for the longest time, I didn't have no respect for myself. Now I do, and other people are starting to. And I really don't know what God's plan is, but all I know is that I can better prepare myself for whatever it is, and that's what I'm working on, you know. Yeah. That's why I decided to go to seminary.
You want to say anything about your the church you've been involved with? I know you've gotten a lot out of that.
Well, yeah, because when I was in Powell, the one good thing about it was there was I met Brian Zimmerman, the pastor of Streetlight Fellowship over in Federal Hill. He has a place in Brooklyn called the Transformation Center, and they used to give out food and clothes on Saturday. I met him, and the van started picking us up and taking us to church. And I've continued to do that since I've been here. And he called me actually one day to come when I was I couldn't go to church that Sunday because of a choir engagement. So he asked me to come over there on Saturday to film my testimony. And the last time I went to church, he said, I want to talk to you, because his vision is to take people's that have transformed lives and use them to transform other lives. And he wants me to come become involved with that ministry that he's got over there in Brooklyn.
Yeah, well, and I'm sure he's very happy about that, because if he wants to help you help lead stuff, what better than a guy that's getting theological training?
Right.
Wonderful.
It's awesome, because it was that's really what put me back into church.
Yeah.
Before I came back here.
Yeah.
Was going to Streetlight or whatever.
Yeah. Wonderful. Dougie, you done good.
I hope so.
Yep. We're really happy for you. So your longest clean time was 2.5 years?
Yes.
So we still got a ways to go.
To get there.
But we plan to just keep right on going.
It's no turning back.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot to ask you, how is your wife?
How is she?
Yeah, how's she doing?
She's doing good. She's, this is the first time in our lives that we both have clean time together. And she actually has a month and a half more than I do. So we both have a year clean together now. She was here for my graduation ceremony, which I shared, you know, with everybody that for the first time in our life that we both are clean and we've got a year foundation to build on, and God is working something new here.
And yet you're continuing to live here. That's what's good for your recovery.
Right. She's clean. She's doing good. She's on a leave of absence right now because she has to have some eye surgery to remove cataracts or whatever. But we're not rushing into moving back in or anything. She knows what I want to do, and she is all on board for it, you know. We're on the same side once in our lives.
Over a year clean for both of you.
Right.
Great stuff. All right. Well, I think that's a wrap, as we say in the industry.
I hope so. I hope it's good. I hope it inspires.